Today on Straight Talk Africa, Kenyan head of state Uhuru Kenyatta became the first incumbent president to appear before the International Criminal Court last week. He faces charges of crimes against humanity for allegedly helping to organize Kenya's 2008 post-election violence. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, October 15th. I am Shaka Salih.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll discuss the significance of Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta's appearance at the Hague-based International Criminal Court last week.
Well, a topic that pushes many buttons and gets passions very high on both sides. Coming up later in our STA inbox, our audience had a lot to say on it through our social media platforms. We'll share some of their thoughts shortly, and we hope you'll stay with us.
But first, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta last week handed over power to Deputy President William Ruto and appeared before the International Criminal Court at The Hague. Deputy President Ruto is also on trial at the ICC for alleged crimes against humanity. My colleague Paul Sisco has more.
Both men are accused of inciting violence that became deadly after disputed elections at the end of 2007 and the beginning of 2008. President Uhuru Kenyatta was greeted by cheering supporters outside the ICC courtroom. He remained silent during the three-hour hearing. His defense lawyer, Stephen Kay, says the Kenyan leader should be acquitted and the case dropped.
The case has failed, and it has failed in a way that means there is no prospect of it going further. If the prosecutor does not intervene, you act to terminate. The prosecutor will not offer any evidence.
The prosecution accuses the Kenyan government of withholding evidence, bank and phone records, and obstructing the investigation, which has been repeatedly postponed.
For the court to make a ruling which will effectively be interpreted as the court saying, if a country sticks out for long enough, obstructing proper inquiries being made by the prosecutor, despite the court having made a finding that that obstruction is improper, then the case against the person that country wants to protect will go away, and that would be a disastrous interpretation.
If the case were to collapse, 1,000-plus victims, their surviving family members and friends, are not likely to feel that justice has been served.
The accused controls an entity. That entity is unlawfully withholding evidence which your honours have directed to be provided.
If Kenya's obstruction of justice in this case is allowed to stand, that will provide an incentive for other countries, whether they're members of the ICC system or not, to themselves obstruct justice in future cases.
The case against President Kenyatta is seen as a major challenge for the Hague Court. The ICC was set up to try cases and deliver justice for victims of mass crimes where local courts would or could not due to the impunity of powerful leaders. A year ago, the African Union voted that the court should not proceed against the sitting head of state. That's counter to declarations by the signatories to the Rome Statute establishing the court in 2002. 34 of the signatories are African, including Kenya.
The pushers of the hegemonistic agenda have been misusing the ICC, an institution we initially supported. In the matter of President Uhuru Kenyatta, my view is that at the next summit, African countries should review their membership of the ICC treaty. The ICC is turning out not to be the value addition product that we had expected to be. It is instead a biased instrument of post-colonial hegemony.
President Kenyatta and Deputy William Ruto say they are not guilty of the crimes against humanity charges for their alleged roles in Kenya's post-election violence. The court is expected to issue a written ruling on the Kenyatta case in the coming weeks. Paul Sisko, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now, joining us here in our Washington studios is our distinguished guest, Dr. Mwangi Wachira, a key advisor to the Kenyan government on international matters, and also served as a speechwriter for founding Kenyan President Jomo Kenyatta. The former World Bank senior economist, Dr. Wachira, is a recipient of one of Kenya's highest awards, the Order of the Grand Warrior in 2009. Well, I have to say, Dr. Wachira, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
I am indeed very honored myself to be here today. Thank you.
You're most welcome, sir. And Stephen Lamoigne, senior advisor with the Coalition for the International Criminal Court, an international non-governmental organization advocating for a fair, effective and independent international criminal court. He advises the group on issues related to the Africa Union, United Nations and other situations in Africa. He joins us from the VOA studios at the UN Secretariat in New York. Thank you so much for joining us, Stephen.
Thank you very much, Shaka, for inviting me to this talk show.
You're most welcome, sir. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Wachira. How significant was the appearance of Kenyan incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta at The Hague last week?
I believe it was very significant, but probably for a reason other than the popular reason as to the significance of the ICC itself. I think the significance lies more in the procedures, the ceremony, the routines that were followed in handing over power, which set a precedent. They set a precedent that should, in future, a head of state be required to go to the ICC, there is a precedent to follow. There is a procedure to follow in handing over power so that things remain normal in the country, not to provoke a crisis. That's the significance.
What about you, Stephen? The last time I checked, the Kenyan president sat over there without, in fact, opening his mouth. Why should he have been there?
Well, the trial chamber decided that the Kenyan president, as an accused person, as you very well know, the ICC does not recognize official capacity, should make an appearance to provide issues of cooperation between the Office of the Prosecutor and the Kenyan government. So like any other person, he is entitled to appear before the court when the court requests for his presence. So it's significant in that sense.
So when do we hear from the judges at The Hague whether, in fact, they are going to postpone the case indefinitely, as requested by the chief prosecutor, or whether, in fact, they can dismiss the case, because that is, in fact, the request from the defense counsel?
Well, Shaka, at this point, there is no indication from the judges whether in the coming weeks or in the coming months the judges will make a decision, so we'll have to wait for that. Of course, as you know, the prosecutor is contesting the whole issue of dismissing the case because there's not been cooperation, in their opinion, from the Kenyan government, whereas the defense argues that the case should be dismissed because there's no evidence. So the judges will make a decision when it's not yet clear right now.
Now, Mr. Mwangi, who should we believe? Because the ICC, especially the Office of the Prosecutor, says that it has not been receiving cooperation from the Kenyan government. The Kenyan government, through its attorney general, says, on the contrary, it has, in fact, been cooperating.
It is my understanding that some information has been made available by the Kenya government as requested by the ICC, but the contention is that the information has not been sufficient. So it isn't, to me, a question of refusal to submit information. It's the adequacy of the information that is at issue, and that is what the court will determine. Is it enough to proceed with the case or not? That's a decision to be made, but my understanding it is some information has been made available. The ICC feels that information is not available. Is it or is it not? Only a person who has access to this information can make that determination.
Stephen, let's be very specific here. We know that the prosecutor has been saying that he's been requiring the Kenyan government to provide them unfettered access to Uhuru Kenyatta's bank accounts and telephone records of the time. Is that what you also know?
Yes, that is on the record. That is what has been stated in the status conference, phone records, tax returns, and a number of other documents that the prosecutor feels they need for their case to move forward. But it's also true, like Mwangi said, that the prosecution has said, of course, they've received some kind of cooperation from the Kenyan government, but the issue of it being sufficient is what is at stake right now.
So where do we go from here?
Well, we have to wait for a decision from the judges of the ICC, and they will decide whether to terminate the case or move forward. That is the next step that can be followed after that.
Now, let me come to you again, Mwangi. You know as well as I do that when you look at the manner in which some sections of the country are reacting or responding to, in fact, the president going to The Hague, you can see that he has plenty of support. He, in fact, has been sort of transformed into a sort of rock star of sorts. But what about the victims? Nobody seems to be there standing for the victims. How come we don't hear much about them, really?
Well, I am with you. I agree with you. There isn't enough attention on the victims. But I think that strategic error was made right from the outset of this case.
Mm.
Almost as soon as the violence took place, the entire process of ICC was, if you will, hijacked for purposes which have nothing to do with the justice that the people who are hurt, people who are killed, people whose properties were damaged need. That is what was lost right from the outset of this case.
So who, when you talk about hijacking, who would you say, for example, that is responsible for that?
I do not think I know who it is that is responsible, but there is a palpable feeling in parts of Kenya that right from the outset, the people who should have been charged were some of the people who should have been charged for responsibility for the violence were not charged,
mm-hmm.
were systematically exonerated, and that is the outrage that you see reflected in the rock star reaction to the president. That is the outrage that won the election, the outrage that people who are responsible for the violence were nevertheless summarily exonerated.
Now, talking about those who may have been responsible for the violence and were exonerated, are you in a position, for example, to name names?
Unfortunately, no, I cannot name names. All I know is that there is a palpable feeling that some who should have been on that list are not on that list, and others who are on that list were placed on that list gratuitously.
Any particular reason why you are not ready to name names? Surely because you must be probably in the loop.
No, let me preface my remarks by saying I am not in the loop. At the present time, I have no association with the government, I have no contact with the government, and my comments are strictly those of a private Kenyan expressing his views. Unfortunately, I don't have access to the names. I understand there is a wacky list, but I have never seen it. So I cannot comment on the names.
I see. Thank you very much. Before we pause for a short break, we would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is on the social networking website Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
On July 10, 2012, the International Criminal Court sets the trial dates for Kenyan post-election violence cases against Uhuru Kenyatta and William Ruto for April 2013. We remember several key dates in 2013, starting on March 7th, when the ICC postpones the trial of then presidential election front-runner Uhuru Kenyatta's trial on charges of crimes against humanity until July 9th. On March 19th, lawyers for President-elect Kenyatta say the charges should be dropped because they are based on hearsay and are fundamentally flawed. On April 10th, Kenyatta is sworn in as Kenya's president despite accusations by the ICC. On June 21st, the ICC delays the start of Kenyatta's trial until November 12th in order to give defense lawyers more time to prepare. On July 20th, two witnesses in the ICC case against President Kenyatta withdraw their testimony because of safety concerns.
Sia Nyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaks to VOA on the Ebola crisis.
I would want the people in West Africa to know that Ebola is real. Ebola kills. Early detection and prompt treatment can save lives. And I'm asking our people not to victimize or stigmatize survivors. Ebola is a challenge, but together we'll all be able to overcome it.
That was Sia Nyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaking to VOA Africa on the Ebola crisis.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111, U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question, keep your comment brief, and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Many of these witnesses have gone to great lengths to risk their lives and the lives of their relatives to support our investigations and prosecutions. These are people of immense moral courage who want to see justice done in Kenya. Incentives, including bribes, have been offered, and in some cases, threats and intimidations have been used to solicit information about our witnesses.
Welcome back. That was International Criminal Court Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda giving her reasons for some of the challenges surrounding Uhuru Kenyatta's case, saying it is witness tampering by the Kenyan government is one of the main hindrances for justice to be served. Stephen, you've obviously been following this case. To what extent have the witnesses really been compromised by those forces that are supportive of Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and indeed Deputy President William Ruto?
Let me start with the challenges that the prosecutor outlined. In January this year in her filing, she mentioned, of course, the issue of witness intimidation, government obstruction, and then they studied the issue of being perceived as an enemy of the Kenyan people if you agree to testify against the president or the deputy president. So that is another challenge. According to our members in Kenya, who have argued that every time the prosecution has revealed the identity of a witness, then you notice that the next time the witness is coming to say that we are not going to move forward to continue to testify against the president because of threats, or if, and this is, I can repeat from last Friday's meeting, if certain documents are requested from a specific organ of the government, then the organ of government ceases to exist. So these are some of the views of our members, and you remember from the status conference, there are about 9 witnesses so far only left from the prosecution side. So the argument from our members is that most of the witnesses who would have testified have been threatened and have either been bribed and so have withdrawn That is the evidence that they have interfered with the case.
If true, given that the ICC at least would seem to claim that it knows about those, some of those people, not that it knows in fact about them, it knows those people that have been compromised. Is there nothing within their power or within its power as an institution that it can do in order to make sure that it has the opportunity for those cases, for example, to continue?
Well, the ICC has taken the step of course, requesting the Kenyan government to send an individual by the name of Walter Barasa, who is alleged to have been participating in some of this instance of intimidation. Of course, he's not yet been delivered to the court. He still remains at large. But, of course, in a courtroom, it is important to have a witness come forward and testify to provide the linkage of the crimes that are alleged to have been committed, that they're alleging that an accuser has been committed. If that evidence is not available, then it's difficult to approve the allegations that a person committed a certain number of crimes. So that is the challenge that the prosecution is facing right now.
Walt Barasa, is that a journalist by profession?
Correct.
I see. Now, what about you, Mwangi? If in fact it is true that you know, some forces in Nairobi have actually been able to effectively compromise some of the would-be witnesses, what do you think, how do you think this case can go forward?
I do not take it as a fact. I take it as an allegation, mm-hmm. as a claim by the ICC that witnesses have been intimidated. I do not know that that is, in fact, correct.
And what about being bribed?
Whether it's being bribed or being intimidated, I do not know whether it is actually correct. I know there is an allegation, but I don't know that that it is actually correct. So I don't want to proceed on the basis that what has been alleged by the ICC is accurate.
Is it possible, sincerely, to prosecute an incumbent president, a person that is in control, for example, of all the state tools, really? You have an attorney general obviously reporting to him. You have the entire security apparatus reporting to the president. Is it possible for an incumbent president, frankly, to be prosecuted and have the evidence, in fact, to take him even further? Or do you, in fact, have to wait until there is a sort of regime change?
I think there was a move, Ali. I do recall there was a move to try and postpone this case until such time as the people who are accused are no longer in office. I do not know why that did not take place. Mm. But I am not aware historically of any president who has been brought to court while they are still in office. So I cannot answer whether it can be done. This would have been a test case. But in the past, there hasn't been any president who has been brought to book while still in office. And that is, I think, what the wisdom of some of the people who requested for this to be postponed until such time as the accused are private citizens.
So what happens to the small guys, the victims, really?
I think that is where we should focus our attention. 1,300 people died. 650,000 people were displaced. The compassion and the compassion should be turned towards those people, towards settling them, towards compensating them, towards reconstituting their lives. I think the government is doing that. It is not done in one dramatic event. From what I follow, from far away, from what I see, it is done a few families at a time. Whenever land is available, the other resources are available, a few people are settled. Mm-hmm. And I think that is where the resources of the government should go, towards reconstituting the people's lives and also putting in place the institutional mechanism to make sure that such a repeat will not happen.
But this is 6 years later, Mwangi.
Yes.
These people live in subhuman conditions.
They do live in very hard conditions, and what resources there have been in the country, it is my understanding that these resources have been made available to the people. Perhaps not as fast as you and I would have liked, perhaps not to the scale that you and I would have liked, but I understand that they are being settled a few families at a time. We have to be realistic. You have to find land, you have to find the wherewithal for them to legally settle in a new place. And that, in the normal course of things, that takes a long time.
I see. Yeah. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Mariama from Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Mariama.
Hello.
Hello.
It's Muva. It's Muva Umariaza.
Muva, how are you?
Fine, sir. How is Straight Talk Africa?
Terrific.
Thank you for the credible job you are doing, sir.
Profoundly honored for your compliments, sir. What is your question?
Now, my question is, now, the issue about the equality before the law, sir. Now, those that are those that have the evidence have clearly shown that Mr. President have hand over this issue. Now, we Africans, we take the head law to be signing to us, but they are more directional to Africans only, sir. Now, how justice will it be done against the law with reference to Mr. President issue, sir? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Umar, from Nigeria. Stephen, did you hear the question?
The question, I did not hear it clearly, but I guess I can try and you can correct me. I think he was asking about the quality of justice and how even justice can be. I don't know if that is the question, but you can repeat from the question.
Yes, in a way, I think you are on the right track. And of course, how it also, the ICC seems in a way to be targeting Africans, or Africa for that matter.
Okay, sure. Sure. Well, Umaru, thanks for your question. Firstly, as you know, Umaru, many Africans, African activists, would disagree with the categorization that the ICC is targeting Africa. And these are the reasons. To date, there are 9 situations in Africa. 4 of those, Uganda, Democratic Republic of Congo, Mali, and Central African Republic, were all referred by African governments themselves. You have in 2 situations where the Security Council referred situations, and I'm talking of Libya and Darfur, Sudan, and I'll be very categorically clear that in situations where the Security Council refers the situation to the ICC, that any blame to be apportioned has to be apportioned to the Security Council for any uneven standards of justice. It has nothing to do with the ICC. Then you have in the situation of Kenya is the only situation where the former prosecutor used his own initiative to basically conduct investigations. But you notice that there had been attempts at the local level to establish some tribunal, but this failed because of politics in the Kenya parliament. It's only after that the prosecutor decided to open investigations. Then you have the situation in Ivory Coast, which Ivory Coast at that point was not a state party, but made a 12-3 declaration saying that the court can come and conduct investigations in that situation. And then the prosecutor took the additional step to open up investigations. So 9 situations because Central Africa, the first situation, 2007, and then you have 2014 in recent events. Now, this clearly demonstrates to you that, well, you have 4 situations referred by African states, and then you cannot argue that because Security Council referred it, the ICC is targeting Africa, and it's very clear that the ICC is not targeting Africa. I'll go much further. In October last year, Desmond Tutu did write to African heads of state during the Extraordinary Summit meeting, and he pointed out very clearly that five times Africa went crying to the ICC that we need you to come and conduct investigations in our territory. And five times the ICC responded to the calls of Africa. This clearly shows to you that basically the ICC is not targeting Africa. And also you'll remember very well that during the Rome Statute discussions, you had 47 delegations from Africa that participated in drafting the Rome Statute. The reason was very clear. Africa did not want a repeat of the 1994 Rwanda genocide, where they felt that the UN and the international community abandoned them and let the genocide happen in Rwanda. So you had Africans taking the initiative to join the treaties, reading it and understanding the contents, I believe very well, knowing what the obligations would be for them when they were bound by such a treaty. What you have is a situation where the controversy starts in 2008 with the ICC. In 2009, the ICC indicting Omar el-Bashir, and then you had the issuing of summons to appear for Kenyatta, then Ruto and six others. Kenyatta was not president then, it was Mwai Kibaki. This situation has only been escalated, of course, now with Kenyatta being elected president, but the indictment was before he was a head of state. So for all these reasons, you cannot argue that the ICC is targeting Africa when there is abundant evidence indicating that Africans themselves continue to demand for intervention of ICC, and to date, they continue.
Thank you.
Yesterday, you had in the Uganda newspaper an African basically opining his opinions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment, but first here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. As I said earlier, the ICC is a topic that pushes many buttons and gets people very excited and passionate about their opinions. Still to come, we'll share some of their thoughts from our followers on all our social media platforms. But first, let's take a look at our letter of the week.
Johnson Atwere from Uganda writes, "I believe the few African leaders who are guilty of wrong deeds seem to think the ICC is targeting them, but those with clean hearts are silent about it and are okay with the ICC. Why are we hearing complaints from the likes of Museveni, Kagame, and Bashir, the quote, guilty parties, unquote, and not Kikwete and Zuma, who seem clean? The ICC should start looking worldwide, for example, at Syria's president, Bashar al-Assad."
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. The International Criminal Court has come under strong criticism from African leaders who accuse it of racism in indicting only Africans. To date, the ICC has opened investigations into 8 cases, and I think I'm going to repeat almost everything that our friend had talked about, just reminding people that 5 of the cases were referred voluntarily by African governments, 2 through a United Nations Security Council resolution, and the Kenyan case was opened at the ICC prosecutor's request. Opinions of Africans vary tremendously on the topic, which brings us to our question of the week, asking, Do you believe that the ICC is a biased judiciary against African heads of state, as some critics have alleged? Well, let's begin with a comment from Davies Malcolm Muela from Zambia, who writes, "The ICC is biased, and Africa must come up with its own continental court. We have enough lawyers. Why have they not tried former U.S. presidents like George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush for any crimes?" Reminder that both presidents were U.S. Presidents, former U.S. presidents, obviously. Let's look at another comment from Mary Wakigo in Kenya, who posted this comment on our wall, saying, "I don't believe that the ICC is biased. African leaders feel victimized because they break the law a lot compared to their Western counterparts. Truth be told, they need someone to monitor their activities. If our leaders were truthful, Africa would be the best place on earth." Well, do African leaders break the law more than Western leaders? That's probably a topic for another day. And I am not sure that even if is it possible to compare right now without any concrete facts. On the issue of African leaders needing monitoring, some would say, why can't that be done by Africans? Africa has laws, right? But how effective and efficient are those laws? And are they being implemented if African leaders are doing something wrong? Shaka and guests, your take on this one.
What about you, Mwangi? When it comes to especially to the Kenyan case, people forget that a one member of parliament called William Ruto, not the deputy president, of course, was last heard saying, "Let us not be vague. Let us go to The Hague." What happened?
Let me try and unpack that question in two stages. First, on the question of five of the cases before the ICC being referred by Africans, that very act, that very action by Africans to refer five of the eight cases to the ICC should signal to the world that Africa is cooperating, Africa believes in justice, Africa wants to get rid of impunity. That should be a compliment to Africa, that it is voluntarily submitted five cases to the ICC. Mm-hmm. So it is not that Africans are opposed to the ICC in principle. Mm-hmm. They indeed support it in principle. Why? They have given it five cases.
But they are what opposed is at to issue, a sitting president.
No. What is at issue is the particular Kenya case. And the issue has been all along that it is fatally flawed from the outset. This has been the central issue from the beginning. It still is the central issue. It is not a rejection of the ICC. It is a rejection of the ICC's handling of this particular case.
I hear you. Mariama, please share some more of our audience feedback.
Well, indeed, Shaka, we'll move on to a posting from Francois Nyeka from Malawi, who writes, "Obviously, yes, the ICC is biased. Otherwise, why do they only exercise their power on African leaders? Many innocent people are dying in Syria, Russia, Iraq, Afghanistan, etc. Why not bring some of those leaders to trial?" Well, that's certainly a very valid argument. And while we're at it, let's take a look at another one, this time from George Gatebi in Kenya, who says, "Now we know better than ever that the ICC is a tool of injustice to promote a neo-colonial agenda by the West. Victims of political violence become the ICC inductees, while the actual perpetrators become the alleged victims and walk free." Shaka. A very loaded comment. No need to add anything else on this one. What do you guys make of it?
What about you, Steve? Do you have a problem with that?
Well, let me start with correcting the misperception that the ICC targets African leaders. The facts are the following. Kenyatta, when he was issued summons to appear, he was not a leader. He's a leader now. The only leaders that have been indicted before the ICC are Omar al-Bashir of Sudan and formerly you had Gaddafi, Omar al-Gaddafi,
the brotherly
of Libya,
leader,
who passed on. Yes, the brotherly leader.
Mm-hmm.
The ICC is also investigating other cases where you have people who are not senior government officials. You've had rebel commanders in Uganda, Democratic Republic of Congo, Central African Republic. The list is endless. Laurent Gbagbo was a former head of state. So the ICC is not only looking at African leaders. It's going after individuals that are alleged to have committed crimes. But I would like to add one thing. To demonstrate that the ICC is not only looking at Africa, and also Mariama's previous question was whether only African leaders are committing crimes. That's not true. The ICC sees with 8 other situations outside Africa. You have Afghanistan, you have Colombia, you have Honduras, you have Georgia, the situation in Georgia, you have Ukraine and Iraq. Of course, the situation in Iraq was open. Right now, there's a British military prosecutor who is looking to allegations of British soldiers who are alleged to have committed crimes, and hopefully there will be some kind of decision that will be made. In addition to that, of course, there's a situation of Guinea and then Nigeria, where the ICC is looking too. So the ICC is definitely not only looking at Africa. It is looking at all countries where crimes are alleged to have been committed, and it only goes after a few. In the Kenyan case, there were 6 individuals. Charges were dropped against 3 of them when it was clear that there was not sufficient evidence. The prosecution at the ICC has continued with the 3 individuals currently because they believe there's evidence to go forward with the cases against them.
Well, thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Thank you to our guests for responding to our audience questions. I think the perception for the African ordinary person is that the list, when you look at the number of not just leaders, I think they're also thinking about the number of individuals that are Africans who are being pursued by the ICC. The scale definitely tips. You know, it seems like there are more Africans, whether they're leaders or individuals, that are being pursued by the ICC than anybody else. But hey, that's basically what our social media response is. That's what we see about the reaction of the people who write to us. But we'll leave it there. That does it for our social media segment. Thanks to our guests for responding once again. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please, please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, please drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Just subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, the Ebola outbreak continues to ravage West Africa. The death toll is over 4,400, according to the World Health Organization, and rising. Health officials from the most affected countries and around the world are working around the clock to contain the deadly virus. We'll examine that and more next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
A reminder that you are tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. US country code is 1. We'll continue in our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
On September 5th, 2013, Kenya's parliament votes to withdraw from the ICC. On October 23rd of the same year, the African Union submits a formal request to the UN Security Council to defer for at least 1 year the ICC trials of Kenyatta and Ruto. On November 1st of that same year, the ICC postpones the trial of President Kenyatta until February 5th, 2014. Nearly a year later, on September 6th, the ICC prosecutors asked for another delay in starting the trial of President Kenyatta, this time due to the Kenyan government's refusal to hand over most of the information they have requested. On October 7th of this year, President Kenyatta temporarily hands over power to Deputy President William Ruto while he attends the ICC hearing at The Hague. On October 9th, President Kenyatta appears before a three-judge panel who must decide whether the case against him should proceed or be withdrawn for lack of evidence.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook. Keywords, Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gizui, and welcome back. Today's topic, we are discussing the significance of Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta's appearance at the Hague-based International Criminal Court last week. Our distinguished guests are Dr. Mwangi Wachira, a key advisor to the Kenyan government on international matters, and also served as a speechwriter for founding Kenyan President Jomo Kenyatta. The former World Bank senior economist, Dr. Wachira, is a recipient of one of Kenya's highest awards, the Order of the Grand Warrior, in 2009. And Stephen Lamogne, senior advisor with the Coalition for the International Criminal Court, an international non-governmental organization advocating for a fair, effective and independent International Criminal Court. He advises the group on issues related to the Africa Union, United Nations and other situations in Africa. He joins us from the VOA studios at the UN Secretariat in New York. Gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa. You're most welcome, Dr. Wachira.
Thank you, Shaka. I only have one minor comment, and this goes to, rather than discussing the details of the ICC case itself, I focus my attention on its foundation. Many Kenyans were surprised by the list of the people who were charged because the list did not accord with their experience.
But it was because of the Kenyans that we are talking about The Hague, frankly. They had been encouraged to come up with a local sort of tribunal. Why did they do it?
A colleague, somebody explained earlier that they did not do it because of local politics. That was mentioned earlier by your colleague. That is good enough explanation for me.
And they thought that the UN's wheels were not moving very fast. They could do whatever they want, and by the time the UN comes around, they are long dead.
I have no evidence of that, that that's what they thought. I don't know that that's what they thought. My understanding is that many of the people who voted to put this case to the ICC were under the impression that they could get justice. That was their main reason for doing that. They could get impartial justice. Mm-hmm. That's what they thought they were trying to do. But my focus is on something much earlier than that. That is the very composition, the very list of people who are charged was called a balanced list.
Let's go to the lifeline of the show because there are so many telephone calls apparently. Othin from New York, good afternoon. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Othin?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
What is your question, sir?
Thank you, Shaka. Our concern as an African continent,
mm-hmm.
is that since the inception of the court in the year 2002, it has investigated close to 20 cases, and 8 out of that are in Africa. Now pursuing more cases now in Africa, altogether much more than all other cases in the regions of the world put together.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that criminal cases are only in Africa or not?
Unfortunately, I think time is not our best ally, really. Let's go to Peter from Tanzania. Good evening, Peter. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Peter, can you hear me? Hello, Peter, can you hear me? I can't even hear Peter either. Hello, Peter? Well, let me come to you, Stephen, in New York. You can see, of course, from someone calling from New York, he still has a problem. He just simply doesn't see why almost every case that we are talking about is from Africa. What about the fact that, for example, a lot has been happening in Syria, and yet no one has heard the ICC or the Security Council attempting, for example, to indict Syrian President Bashar al-Assad? No one heard, for example, anybody trying to, this is of course Africa, but North Africa, trying to, for example, to go for a man called Field Marshal Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, president of Egypt, after they overthrew President Morsi, who was democratically elected, and a lot of people were killed.
Well, Shaka, to answer your question and also Othin's question, very simple. You have to look at the trigger mechanism of how the ICC becomes seized with the situation, and I'll break them down for you. In cases where a country is a state party to the ICC, it can refer a situation to the ICC, or a state party can refer that. If it's not a state party, then the Security Council can refer a situation. That is where you have the two countries you've talked of. You've talked of Egypt and Syria. And you very well know that the UN is a political entity. Different states have been protecting states that they are very close to them because of their own national interests. Russia, China have been protecting Syria. Other countries have been pushing. And you had just last month at the UN General Assembly, a lot of states spoke out openly against the use of the veto power where mass atrocities are being committed. This is a demonstration to the world that a number of states are not happy with the way the veto is being abused by some of the permanent members of the Security Council. If you want, you can also look at Palestine, where Israel, the situation has been brought up and referred several times by the African Union, United States, Canada, and other states block that every time it's brought up. So you have the Political Security Council, which you have to separate from the ICC, because it can refer a situation, Security Council can refer a situation to the ICC, but does not mean that the ICC is definitely going to translate that into arrest warrants. They have to do their own homework, investigations, and convince the judges that there is a cause to take forward a case. So it's not automatic that just because the Security Council refers it, the ICC will take it. But there is the politics of the Security Council, the political body, the ICC, the judicial institution. So those are very clear distinctions that you have to take into account.
I see. Dr. Mwangi, I have an email from a professor, Ami Omara Otunu, a UNESCO chair in human rights at the University of Connecticut at Stowers. He's basically saying that we had an extraordinary African Union summit by all heads of state. They went to Addis Ababa, the Ethiopian capital, to seriously look at this indictment of Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta. And yet, we have a very, very bad situation regarding the Ebola, for example, virus in some parts of West Africa. We have Africans dying in the Mediterranean, trying to get to Europe, you know, to greener pastures and stuff like that. And yet we don't hear any voices calling for an extraordinary summit in Addis Ababa to talk about these things that affect ordinary Africans. is the African Union for African presidents and prime ministers and not for the African ordinary people?
Well, I take exception to the implication that the OAU, the AU is for presidents and not for ordinary people, because if you look at the various secretariats that comprise the AU, the various commissions, they really do address many of the issues that pertain, that affect ordinary people, mm-hmm. be it agriculture, be it education, be it health. They have various bodies, various professionals, groups of professionals addressing those issues that affect the ordinary person. We don't hear them. We don't hear of them because most of them work quietly in the background. Mm-hmm. We only hear about a meeting of the heads of the states in Addis Ababa, but you don't know what has been happening for the last 1 year, for instance, in the commissions that are charged by AU mm-hmm. to deliver services to Africa. I think it's a matter of attention, but my familiarity with AU tells me that they are indeed addressing issues that are pertinent to the lives of the ordinary person. It may not be Ebola, and I will not be surprised if that does come up within the next matter of weeks at the level of AU. I will not be surprised. It does take a little bit of time for the wherewithal to galvanize so that people can have a meeting to discuss what to do, but I expect it will be within their purview fairly soon.
I'm sure the AU Secretariat in Addis Ababa must be feeling good listening to what you've just said.
No, it's from experience.
Yes. Let's go to Peter in Tanzania. Peter, are you there? Peter, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes. Do you have a question? You have 30 seconds, to be honest with you. Time is not our best ally.
All right. My question is it possible for ICC to jail the incumbent president? For example, this Uhuru Kenyatta, if that is possible, then what is the preparation done by ICC to control the situation whereby the violence can occur due to lack of having a president?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Don't forget that Mr. Kenyatta was smart enough to hand over power temporarily to his deputy president. Before we go, we would be remiss if I didn't mention the passing of one of the foremost scholars of African studies, Professor Ali Mazrui, who died Sunday at the age of 81 after a long illness. In 2005, Mazrui was named as one of the top 100 most influential intellectuals in the world by American and British magazines. His research in African and Islamic studies, international politics and culture, and North-South relations is highly respected and referred to widely in the academic world. He will probably be best remembered for The Africans, A Triple Heritage, a controversial documentary on Africa and its interaction with the rest of the world, which he hosted in 1986. Kenyan Mazrui was the Albert Schweitzer Professor in the Humanities at SUNY Binghamton in New York at the time of his death. He was born in the Kenyan coastal city of Mombasa in 1933. He is survived by his wife, Pauline Uti, and 6 children. Over the years, I had the honor and privilege to interact with and host Mazrui on Straight Talk Africa as one of the most remarkable newsmakers and human being on our program. A true African treasure and an intellectual giant, may his soul rest in eternal peace. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Dr. Mwangi Wachira, a key advisor to the Kenyan government on international matters, and also served as a speechwriter for founding Kenyan President Jomo Kenyatta, and Stephen Lamonye of the Coalition for the International Criminal Court, who joined us from the VOA studios at the UN Secretariat in New York. Thanks to our field stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, please. And remember to keep the African hopes alive.